Hello, this is Frankly Speaking, an informational exchange of problems and issues of relevance to people everywhere. Today's program addresses the subject of job hunting and career planning. I'm Stephanie Hopkins for George Mason University. But before I introduce my entire panelist, I'd like for you to meet Janice Sutera, Coordinator of Career Programs and Counseling, Career Services at George Mason University.
Career planning is not a magical process. Like any other planning process, it requires thought and research. There are several steps that must be considered: self-assessment, research, and actual job hunting.
To elaborate on the subject, my other panelist is Linda Kaufman, a placement counselor in career services at the university. Welcome to the program. Exactly what is a career? How would you define it?
Career is probably a series of steps that people go through as they go through their life, consisting of planning through their education and jobs.
I think one of the things that people have a mistake about is that they think that they'll start a career when they finish college or start a career when it's time to go to work, and they'll just stay with that career the rest of their lives, and it's not true. People have 3 to 5 different careers over the span of a lifetime. So it's a decision that you make, you walk through, and then you may change 5, 10 years from now.
Are careers being considered differently now? In other words, you mentioned an individual would finish college or high school and stay with the same career. Now I'm finding individuals that have once been in the military and had a career, a full 20, 25 or 30 years, all of a sudden are doing something different. Or an individual who was possibly a physicist has gone back to law school and is now changing their careers.
I think there's a whole different attitude toward careers. There's a different look at work. That's what I'm finding more and more, is that people will work for a while, learn everything that they can about that job, maybe stay with it 15 years, maybe 10 years, and then go back and decide, hey, there are other things that I'm interested in. There are things that I've found out on the job that I'd like to apply, that I'd like to try out someplace else, and then just change.
People have also found out that they can't be an expert in only one thing or know only one thing and be successful in as they progress through a career path, so that they've had to pick up things from other fields and so combined areas in their careers and become interdisciplinary.
What about the person who has had many careers? You mentioned 3 to 5 careers in a lifetime. Suppose there's the individual that has set up goals for themselves, and within a period of 5 years, they've accomplished 3 to 4 goals, and then they go on projecting for the next 10 or 15 years.
Well, I think that what you're saying is that people are realizing more and more that they want to control where they're headed. They want to set their own goals and get there. And I think it's exciting. That's the thing that I've done over the last few years. I've done a number of different, very, very different careers. I started out in elementary education, decided I wanted to work with adults. So then I went and started doing staff development and training as a consultant. Did that for 3 years and decided that, well, there were other things that I wanted to do. I really enjoy working with people individually more than I got a chance to do when I was consulting.
Are those types of persons considered job hunters or
job hoppers? I think to a certain extent, yes. But on the other hand, the thing that I'm finding more and more is that people are looking at what skills they develop rather than just what field they've been working in. People are realizing that the skills that I learned as a consultant I've taken with me here to George Mason and have been able to apply those here. So that it's not like I started completely over at ground zero when I changed jobs, because I had the skills. I have a skill package that I take with me when I change from one area to another area.
Janice, in your opening statement, you mentioned something about self-assessment. Exactly what does that mean?
It means considering some of the skills that you have, as Linda mentioned, knowing what your skills are and what your skill package might be, combining and recombining that through your life, knowing where your interests are, because the interests provide you with the motivation to get through when the going gets tough in any particular position, and knowing what your values are so that you make good choices about a particular position, a particular company, the colleagues that you want to be around. So working conditions, working relationships, you know what those priorities are, as well as your personal priorities. And thinking about those, I think, prevents you from making mistakes and taking jobs.
Is that a part of the research?
It's part of the self-research. Research that I mentioned earlier has to do with identifying employers that might be suitable towards your self-assessment, the assessment that you've done. Researching them through written information that you may find, through talking with people who have worked at that place before or who work there now.
All of that's a part of the total packaging that you've been talking about.
Yes.
Once you've done your self-assessment and you have put together your research package, what are we talking about in terms of job hunting strategies? Are there certain things that you should look forward to or make sure that you depict for a different employer versus another one?
There's a lot of things that go into developing your own personal job strategy. One of the things that you mentioned, Stephanie, is that you need to look at who your audience is and kind of tailor your own strategy based on who your audience is. I mean, I see students who are maybe going into some different area in the arts. Now, they're going to market themselves differently than someone who's an accountant. You just have to look at who you're aiming at. And then, go ahead.
And then market yourself through your resume and writing it in certain ways, with certain words in it even, to emphasize those skills that you have to offer towards that particular kind of employer. Thinking through those same kinds of things for yourself as you meet the needs of that employer in an interview situation.
Let's talk about that marketing for a second. Isn't it possible within a career area that you market yourself differently to one employer versus the other? For instance, I have 3 or 4 different resumes, and although they really pertain to the same individual, I send the resume that is most appropriate based on the type of employer that I'm trying to make contact with.
Sure, and that's going to take time on your part to research the employer so that you know who the different employers are. You need to know basically what you have to offer may be the same to a number of different people, but you're setting it up differently. You're saying, mm-hmm. You're saying it differently. You're presenting it differently.
And then, too, there might be different priorities for one particular mm-hmm. position versus another.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I was going to say you're speaking their language, and what you have to do is find out what their language is and how they would best view you. That's what appeals to employers. I think you have to filter your information through that research.
Yeah. If you look, say, at a computer firm and you're applying for a position as a programmer or a systems analyst, I think that a lot of people who go into the computer field are very analytical. They want to know the information. They want to know specifically, bing, 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 what's there. And you need to set up your resume, realizing that your audience is probably someone with a background in math or very hard sciences who's looking for the pertinent information, who doesn't want to know anything else. If you're applying for a writing position someplace, I think you'd keep in mind the fact they want to know how your writing skills are. So you ought to have enough on there to show some of your writing skills. So I think that thinking through who you're looking at, and also as far as resumes are concerned, if you can think through exactly what the skills are that are needed for a position, it makes it a lot easier for you to write your resume because you know what's needed. You can tailor everything based on what is actually needed.
Let's talk about tailoring. Now, there used to be the philosophy, let me give them everything. I'll send the 20-page document in and they'll see how qualified I am. Then there was the theory, let me send them one page. They really don't want to read all of that material. I've gotten to the point whereby I've determined personally, based on the career, it is best to send a 2-page summary data sheet that outlines all of the given elements for my particular profession, and then have the detailed information as appendices, as data that they can go through if they so desire. However, it is not necessary to get the gist mm-hmm. of what I do and what I do best. Now, what is the philosophy in 1981?
think it's a combination of what you said. It's again, looking at the type of employer, looking at the information that you have to share with them. Some people only have one page worth of information to share. And what they want to do then is highlight that information, probably in a cover letter, to make sure that they've said everything that will attract that employer's attention. Tailoring also has to do with the subtleties of using words that will appeal to that particular employer, so that if you know a job description for a particular job, you should identify the words, the skill words, that depict the functions you would want to communicate, and communicate them in your resume as strongly as you can.
That's what I'm finding. And we always, I always tell people when I'm working with them on their resumes that it's important for them to, make it as brief as possible and try and keep it to one page, because I think employers appreciate having just one piece of paper that they can look at. They can see a summary of everything that's gone on. But on the other hand, I know of one girl who wrote a resume that was 8 pages long and got a job with a big 8 accounting firm. So I don't think there are any hard and fast rules that you can say it has to be this way or it has to be this way. And that's what I'm finding more and more. There are exceptions to every rule we set up. It's our opinion that a short, concise resume presents the best picture and gets read. So that's what we recommend.
What about the cover letter? Is it a necessity? Is it recommended?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
It's one of those things which allows you to use sometimes the same resume for several different firms, but to detail and highlight that particular information that employer wants to hear. The fact that you know somebody who works there, the fact that you've worked in that particular area before, and maybe not at that place, but can attract the employer's attention to read the resume.
Now, we've got the resume intact, we've made contact, and we're going on that interview. What would you advise?
Wow. I guess the things that are really important when you get out there for your actual interview are little things that make the first impression. You need to really stand up, make a good, solid handshake with the person when they come out to greet you as you're waiting in the lobby or wherever you're waiting. Think it's important to have good eye contact and look the person straight in the face. And the other thing is you need to think about how you want to dress, because dress is really an important thing. People make decisions on you, make some really solid judgments about you in the first 10 seconds that they met you, which means your clothes and the way you present yourself physically is a tremendous influencing factor.
Oh, that's part of your professional image.
Mm-hmm. In other words, no blue jeans, ladies preferable skirts, suits,
I'd
dresses.
Say suits, fairly conservative.
Men and ladies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any last minute tips to our audience?
Outside of just having that interview, you need to follow up with employers to make sure that they have thought about you since that interview. Sometimes a phone call to people afterwards really is the final step and the most helpful step that you can do for yourself.
Thank you for being here. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public affairs program produced by George Mason University. Pat Ping, production coordinator. For information about our guest or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. I'm Stephanie Hopkins for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.
The thing you have to remember as you're looking for a job is that looking for a job is a full-time job. You can't just do it a little bit here, a little bit there. If you want to be successful, put your time into it, put your effort into it, and really make contacts. The most important part of finding a job is meeting people and getting out, talking to people, making a good impression, following up. So, good luck.